We will pick up with the second definition of the anima and animus. Remember, the first definition was a personification of the conscious sexual tendencies in the unconscious. The first definition of the anima and animus was a personification of the conscious sexual tendencies in the unconscious. That's that. It's not, that's a mouse dying in the kitchen. That's Jesus, and we better watch out. Okay, are you comfortable with that first definition? We're going to go on to the second definition. But rather than me tell you, I want you to tell me, because it's really common sense. So I'm going to give you a vignette. And that should walk you through psyching out what Jung means, what Jung's second definition of the unconscious is. The anima and animus is. This came from a Swiss newspaper. True story. It's the coffee pot. It's not really Jesus. Dear Helga, this is like their Ann Landers. She's writing. Dear Helga, I am a happily married woman, a mother of three beautiful children, the youngest of which is a senior in high school. I love my husband dearly. Last night, my husband brought a business colleague home for dinner. After the meal, as I collected the dishes and was carrying them into the kitchen, a thought flashed through my mind like a bolt of lightning. I realized I had been fascinated by my husband's colleague, and this was the thought which came upon me. What would it be like to have a child by this man? When this happened, I dropped the dishes I was carrying. I made a complete fool of myself and remained flustered the remainder of the evening. Help, what is wrong with me? What's going on? Okay, she's had a positive projection onto a male figure of her animus. Is that clear to everybody? How would you find out what quality in herself she is projecting and therefore in need of developing within herself? But what aspect? How would you find out what aspect? How would you find that out for sure? Right, true. She wants to make a new start with something. But with what quality is she being invited to make a new start? How would you find that out? Ask her what he was like. The way she describes him would be representative of the quality in herself, one of these, no doubt, that is ready to be developed. Now my question is, why did this happen that night?
Because her life's about to change with the youngest son probably going off to college and leaving home, and she's kept fermenting inside of
her. Could you all hear that? No, because she's about, because her youngest son is about ready to leave home. She's dealing with the empty nest syndrome. And what did you say? I don't want to put words.
All that was fermenting inside.
Because he wasn't gone yet. Yeah, it was coming. Now, without knowing it, you have defined Jung's second understanding of the anima and animus, which is, I will give you the definition and then see if you can explain it to me. A personification of the relation to the unconscious. So the first definition is a personification of the contrasexual tendencies in the unconscious. The second definition is a personification of the relation to the unconscious. Can you put that in your own words, using the vignette to help you?
The unconscious is asking something new of us?
Right. See, this changes everything. Up to now, we've been looking at cause and effect, the shadow. And with these, to a certain extent. But here, the game changes, and this, to my feeling, is where Jung really gets to be interesting. When it is time for you to make a next step, it is the nature of the anima and animus to create a projection representative of that next step and to arrange an erotic fascination to bring you into touch with this or some quality of yourself. What the anima does, an animus does, it relates you to your unconscious developmental process. It's a future-oriented understanding. These things are not caused, they're purposed. See, just at the time her children were leaving and she is dealing with the empty nest, just when it is time for her to make a new start, up pops this projection. And it pops up purposefully to tell her where her next step in life is to go. Yes, but we're not quite at the self yet, but I would say for our level, it's a bridge between herself and how the unconscious knows how her life can develop. Does that make sense if I put it that way? See, there's a foreknowledge here. These are not random acts. These are purposive acts. Yeah. Yes, I mean, ideally this happens in dreams alone. But I think even if you are doing hard inner work, you don't get out of this. Somehow the psyche is determined to rivet you to your own future, and this is the seems to be the prime way it does it. Yeah.
In literature, would they call this foreshadowing?
Yes. In literature, you call it foreshadowing. In theology, you call it teleology. And I'm trying not to use big words, so I just said purposive. Yeah. Now look at what's happening, though.
Does it have to be a person, or can you fall in love with something?
Does it always take the form of a person? I'm guessing if you fall in love with a thing, it's a substitute for falling in love with a person. But I don't know for sure. I've never seen it. In other words, you know, people fall in love with their car or their iPod. I mean, that's a little silly.
But no, but I'm thinking about, like, what's happening for me is I'm falling in love with sewing. Again.
Oh.
So, and
no, I don't. No, that would probably be the immediate fulfillment of
okay.
Yeah, of what you're to do.
Okay.
See, what this is trying to bring you to is your creativity. So you're already being creative. So that could very well be the goal.
But I mean, it's a new thing. In other words,
yeah,
suddenly
that's your baby. You
yeah,
see.
Suddenly it's highly charged.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, look what's going on. Life goes on. And the unconscious knows. You see, this is the big thing with Jung. This system down here is not just a repository. It is another system of intelligence, just one not known to you. And when it is time to make a step, it will create a projection. And when you understand what that projection is, your life continues to develop. And again, maybe in 5 years down the road, it's time for another transition. These always occur at periods of transition.
There's another creative transition. The unconscious creates another projection. You understand what that means, and your life goes on. By examining the nature of your projections, you are getting to know the knowledge which is in this unknown system. That's what he means by a personification of the relation to the unconscious. But what it does, it begins to chart your life course from a dimension deeper than reason. This is desire. And it is not merely the literal fulfilling of desire, it's understanding the meaning of the desire, here, the child, and whatever that man would represent. And the integration into your life of the meaning of what that sexual projection is. And as you work with that, your life moves forward based on your love. Not reason. What the Greeks called eros. What you find attractive becomes the means of knowing where your life is going. And that is an arrangement from the intelligence in the unconscious, which is not available to your ordinary perceptive system.
So back to a woman who continuously falls in love with men who are violent, it's not that she should be with a violent man, it's that she needs to reclaim her own power.
Now, some of the specific questions we had, when you're stuck in the same do loop in bad relationships, you're being drawn to that person through a projection. And to the extent you don't understand the meaning of that projection, you keep going back to it until you get it. But you see how Jung has introduced a whole new factor into human motivation. We're not looking at this as a past causing this, but as a future which draws us to it. So for Jung, the past is as important a phenomenon in human behavioral motivation as is the past.
Future.
Did I say it wrong? The future is as important a factor in behavioral motivation as is the past. That's why he couldn't stomach Freud. So when you're looking at a dream image or a problem in your life, let's say the relationship issue or in this case, an erotic fascination, you always have to decide, now, do I look at this from the point of view of cause? Is this something I'm doing that I should just stop? Or is this something that is telling me something? And when I understand and continue my development, the behavioral manifestation will evaporate because its meaning has been understood. So Jung replaces strict causality with questions of meaning. So if you have a difficult dream image, now, and generally in the anima or animus sphere, see how different this is in the shadow. That's why he carves this up. If you have a problematic issue in your dreams of a man or a woman, it may not be that there's something wrong about you that you don't understand, that you've buried. And if you take it that way, you're destroying your capacity to evolve in the future. And that is what is so destructive about applying a causal-based understanding to these phenomena. You have to ask not what the cause is, but what is the purpose of this dream figure. That's why Jung makes a distinction between the shadow and the anima and animus. With the shadow, you're asking about cause. With the anima and animus, you can sometimes ask about cause, but more than likely you should be asking about purpose. It's not that there's something wrong with you. It's that there's something right with you that you have not yet developed. And that is showing up in a problematic state in the present. Big, big difference. You see, this line now is what we were referring to earlier as the axis of the gyroscope. This is the real you coming to birth step by step not because you think you should be some way, which is probably a false ideal, but because you are listening to where your passion is, and you're interpreting it, and you're letting it move you through life. This keeps you interesting. The other makes you dull before your time. The twinkle you could see in Jung's eye at 84 was because he went through hell figuring this out. But you see what you get is vitality, because your energy is behind your life. Your sexuality, your passion, and your professional, personal development are not separate things. I think this is one of Jung's major contributions.
I wonder what that 50% there is, the shadow is that it's the same gender. And then if it's the opposite, it's attraction. But what if the opposite is like some fear that
Yeah. Now, when this process is stopped by stubbornness, laziness, or rationality, it always knows better, this thing up here gets upset. And so the appearance of negative figures here, which does happen, isn't because there's something negative in you, it's because the positive is trying to get through and it can't. And that is, of course, very prevalent, these negative images. But what Jung has tried to discern is they are consequences, and this is the primary phenomenon.
Question.
Yeah.
Ah,
that's a deep question. Infallible. It does assume that there is a intelligence down there. I wouldn't say infallible, but I would say probably smarter than we are. However, and this is something we will get into later if you decide to stick with this thing. Later, I mean, about a year and a half from now. It requires human judgment for this to work properly. No, it is not always reliable. But yes, it is more often reliable than not. And you have to be able to distinguish which. So it's not a free lunch. You have to assess and discern where this direction wants to go and whether or not it is consonant with your value system. If it isn't, you have a right to complain. So ultimately it's a dialogue, is my point. But I think if the dialogue is done right, basically it is a trustworthy process, knowing, and I will need to say, there are times when it is not. That's a little bit out of our scope today. It really has to do with evil. Where is evil trying to wreck your life? But that's let's do one thing at a time. But I understand your question is very important. It is a dialogue.
Couldn't you look at it also as kind of like the body? In other words, you're born into a specific body with a certain genetic makeup.
Yeah.
And that body is trying to live out a certain arc. You know, your lungs want to develop in a
right.
certain way
right.
and various kinds of things. And there could be all sorts of things that stop. You know, if you carry a weight on your shoulder, the skeleton can't move in a way. So it's almost like pre-programmed in the form of the thing that you are that wants to reach its arc.
Yeah, like your body is meant to develop into an adult frame, so is your personality.
Right. And it's meant to be your adult frame. It's not a generic adult.
It's not a, not a generic.
It's specific to you.
And where our adult body, more or less, is finished by, what, 20, the the personality is not finished if you're living right until you die. So that your last day should be your fulfilled day. Let me add one more term. You're comfortable with this? This is what Jung calls spirit. All I'm doing is giving you terms for what I've been skirting around all day. For Jung's, instinct is a repetitive behavior. It doesn't change. Look at ancient Egypt. For 3,000 years, there was hardly any change in the art. That's a conservative, instinctually functioning society. That's basically the understanding of instinct that's common to all of psychology except for Jung. And Jung says in instinct there is also something called spirit. That spirit is this capacity to move forward out of repetitive patterns. But it doesn't get active until it is confronted by a conscious person. And just as the, you know, I think any scientist would be more or less comfortable with the fact that there's instinct inborn, Jung is saying, no, there's a spirit inborn as well. This direction, knowing capacity to move your life into the final frame, out of repetitive patterns, is inborn and what we in Jungian psychology are trying to work with. How? So in this woman's example, the spirit is just the word Jung gave to the fact that her erotic fascination, in a sense, knew where her life should go. There is an intelligence that knows the direction of your life that is inborn, and Jung just gives that a word, and he calls it spirit. Is that okay? Yeah.
Not to make this stupid question about splitting hairs or anything, but what about instinct, if my understanding of instinct is correct, would Jung have found problematic? Because
nothing.
If it was able to keep itself going for that long, yeah. Day, that's better than a lot of...
Oh, well, because the world has gotten too complex.
What about instinct just in its own right, though, is problematic?
It can't cope with the changes that time puts on us.
And is that where evolution occurs?
Yes. I don't think Jung actually says this. Maybe he does, but I would say it. This is psychological evolution, which is a sub-principle of biological evolution. We are not just evolving physiologically, we are also evolving culturally and mentally. And this is what's behind it. This is what is behind the evolution of human beings from ape to today and on. I just wanted to give you the sense that for Jung this is inborn, it is not derivative. We'll talk more about that later, but just to give you the vocabulary. And to give you the sense of, just to give you a word for this capacity of what looks like random emotional, sometimes sexual, unconscious processes to really have a purpose. They are not random, they are actually purposive. And the reason they are purposive is because we're built that way. Jung just gives that a word and says, there's an inborn spirit. Spirit. That arranges phases of our life because it knows what those phases are. I mean, the presuppositions there are quite significant, but he makes them. We'll return to this later today. We'll talk about archetypes, and this is touching on archetypes. A couple of animus dreams. page 3. The first dream is the dream of a playboy. At least Don Juan. It's a dream, I'll give you a hint. It's a dream where the anima is not working. A fairly cute young woman is trying to find a way to exchange my foreign currency for U.S. dollars. She's short, maybe freckled, and short hair, I think red. She seems quite young, maybe 19 or 20. Also seems young, independent of her chronological age. She tries very hard and is very apologetic when she is unable to exchange the currency. I tell her, thanks anyway, I appreciate her effort and not to worry. Then follows a graphic scene in which the dreamer is attracted to this woman as a cute young thing, but not as a mature woman. They begin petting, and the dreamer discovers that the young woman has a penis instead of a vagina, so that no consummation takes place. Now that's an anima dream. What's going on? What does it mean to exchange foreign currency for U.S. dollars? No, it's transition. I gave you in the vignette that we did, the U.S. dollars would be the recognition of how her life is to develop. The foreign currency would be her sexual fantasy about the guy. And what we have to do is take those sexual fantasies, the foreign currency, and translate them into something of useful currency for our life, namely what the meaning of that fantasy is. But this guy approaches his eroticism as something to concretize whenever he feels it. So it keeps the anima from teaching him what he needs to know. And that keeps her from being feminine, which is why she's got the penis. So whenever he has an erotic fantasy, rather than saying, what does this mean, he acts it out. So the erotic fantasy would be the foreign currency. The meaning of the fantasy would be the meaning it is for his life. But if he acts it out, then that transition can't occur. Does that make sense to everybody? This is getting more difficult, I realize.
That
means
because he concretizes everything.
Right.
The dream, put it right back on.
The dream puts it right back on him and shows how he does not let his anima, I mean, her inability to not be able to make the exchange is a result of his concretistic attitude toward sex.
And the fact that she stays young,
he is unable to proceed through this. He cannot let his eros be symbolic because he never asks the question, why am I attracted to her? As soon as he's attracted to her, he seduces her and goes on to the next one.
So he can't have a relationship with a woman. He has a relationship with a girl.
And he has no relationship to his anima. If he had a relationship to his anima, he would be interpreting these feelings, understanding their meaning, and changing his life direction. Because he has no relationship with his anima, he has no relationship with a woman either. It's complicated, so if you're not clear, please stop me. I know it's getting more difficult, but it's because these are new ideas. This idea of purpose is nothing that you're probably familiar with, unless you've been reading Jung before. But he brings in a whole new dimension. And it's not some weird concept. It is an attempt to watch how people's behavior is meant to lead them somewhere. And if it is understood, it does so. And the pathologically looking aspect of the behavior dissolves. Because it is not caused, it is purposed. When the purpose is misunderstood, it becomes difficult. You sure you're okay with that? Positive? Double positive? No, I didn't think so. Go ahead, questions. Well, yeah, practically he has several problems. One, he's a Don Juan. He never settles down. Now, that's the manifest issue. What that also means is that he can't let his passion become the means by where he learns about himself. Because he doesn't question his passion, he acts on it every time. If he could have a passionate feeling for a woman, ask himself, now why am I attracted to her? What is this attraction telling me? Like we tried to get our housewife to say, what is your next step? If he could say, how is this relationship announcing my next step? Then his inner woman would be converting currency. Her desire would become some source of information for the way he lives his life, which would be the U.S. currency. He could spend that understanding, but he can't spend the understanding of pure passion.
Okay, so this is also an example of people in real life, in our lives, where you said sometimes we don't progress because we get complacent and we don't, you know, speak.
Yeah.
Is that what,
yeah.
Like an example of
that. Right. I mean, yes. See, he kept going back to the same sexy tarts. And not being able to establish a relationship with him. Because that relationship to that woman was so charged up with a message for him about how he should develop personally and professionally, which he couldn't hear because he never asked that question. He would just sleep with her and then go on to the next one.
But maybe he's a handbag, that's where he wants to be. Maybe he never wants to move on. That's what I'm saying.
Well, it's true. He doesn't. But his anima does.
He may never move on. Is that what you're saying, though? That somebody may never keep going?
Well, in this case, he did move on. I mean, he was able to hear this. But let's say an individual who was living this out with no avenue for insight, right, that's why you get 60-year-old alcoholics. They're stuck right here. Can I move on? You sure? Okay. Now that was a negative. This is a positive. A woman. I am in a large area in our church where Bill is in front of a large group with a portable microphone. He is speaking to the group. They are processing Reverend X's sermons and asking questions of Bill about the sermons. I walk into the room carrying a 2-year-old boy, a child. I observe what is going on, nod my hello to Bill, he glances my way, and he goes on with his responsibility. I walk out of the room happily carrying the boy child. He is growing, getting heavier, and I think about putting him down so he can walk. Bill is a woman, is a man that the woman dreamer was kind of had a crush on. I wouldn't say in love with, but very fascinated by. She was married and did not want to betray her husband. But she also had to admit that she was pretty much gaga over Bill. Bill was a very talented musician, genuinely cultured, and very intelligent. Now, what of herself is she projecting onto Bill? Right. Her ability to think and assess matters of religion is what he represents. And in working on that in herself, developing her own trust in her thought process, in her judgment, in her ability to understand and discriminate in matters of religion, I say that because of the sermon, she could get past her fascination with him. See, in that case, the fascination for Bill would be the foreign currency and the understanding that Bill represents her intelligence and capacity for true value assessment would be the U.S. dollars. And here, she makes that. She's making that conversion. And she was in therapy for, how long would you guess?
2 years.
Yeah, Sandy.
Now, what if she kept having dreams about this girl?
Well, as she worked on that and started studying a bit of theology, trying to discriminate what is genuine religion, what is not genuine religion, where do I fit in, what is meaning, what is God, and therefore not being intimidated by stuff coming from the pulpit and being able to assess this, the fascination went.
Well, maybe in a case, though, if she, say in another case, she would keep dreaming about this person, maybe somehow she wasn't quite getting the idea of how to transfer this knowledge of what he is to physical reality.
Right. See, that's the converting the money. Yes, and see, the implication is that when you do understand it, the dreams will stop. And when you do understand it, the relationship will go from this erotic charge to a friendship. She and Bill were then able to develop a platonic and meaningful friendship. The feelings actually change. That's where you know you're on the right track. You don't get rid of the feelings by should. The feelings change in and of themselves when their meaning is understood. And I've seen people, myself included, change in 2 minutes. When the insight dawns, it's remarkable how the feelings change. And is not the same as repression or ignoring for moral reasons. Now that's the animate animus. Yeah. Interpret your fascinations to yourself. It's not easy, I grant, but I don't think it's impossible. You know, when you are fascinated with somebody and you don't want to have a concrete relationship with that person, ask yourself, what is this feeling telling me?
But in general society, do you think that's going
on? No.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying, how successful is this paradigm at making itself well known?
Well, well known, I mean, that's another issue.
But there is this whole big scheme of thought that things happen for a reason and people come into your life for a reason.
Oh, yeah,
I think there's a bunch of that stuff out there. I agree.
But see, it does go against nature. Mm-hmm. And that's where it meets resistances. And I've never said this is a general panacea.
Like our ego just naturally resists it because it doesn't want to see that. I mean, we want to hold on to what we think of ourselves.
First of all, conventional morality murders this process. And because it feels wrong. And people will often think it says there's something wrong with their marriage if they're married. But it may have nothing to do with the marriage. It's about your future. And the future is just pulling this person into your life to tell you something. So people freak out that it means there's a marriage issue, when in fact there's not. And part of our job is to explain that to people. You know, she says, what's wrong with me? Nothing's wrong with her. And then there's this whole issue that we don't like being told how to live. And that's one thing if it comes from the outside, but what if it comes from the inside? Well, it's no better. It feels rotten. But one has learned by following these things, you do come into, in the long run, a more satisfying life. Yeah?
Just wondering what you meant by goes against nature.
Oh, because the natural thing is just to go satisfy yourself.
All right, but I guess I'm seeing this as a deeper
nature. Well, yes, it is a deeper nature.
Okay.
Definitely. Yeah, and you know, to put what you just said in this language, there is a spirit in nature which has not been recognized until Jung pointed it out. Yes. And I do think this is a much more satisfying way to live, although it is more difficult, because you are not in the long run at odds with your instinct. Where if you try to control these things morally, you may be behaving well, but there are many unhappy animals down in the dungeon. But it takes certain responsibility and discipline and suffering to see what you want and then not go for it.
And is there pressure or something
that this question's about the negative men, negative women in dreams. Right, when this is denied again and again, then they start getting negative. And then you have dreams of these figures trying to kill you. And they're not trying to kill you physically, they're trying to kill your stubbornness. But the problem is sometimes they kill you physically in the process. I think some disease can be traced to this. Okay? Sign and symbol. I can do very easily. These images are symbols. A sign is a image of something known or knowable from the past. So when Freud says a phallic symbol, it would be more accurate to say a phallic sign. A sign is just a substitute expression for something known, or once known. But it's a image of something in the past that's been forgotten. So some dream images are signs, and some dream images are symbols, meaning they are portraits of the future which has not yet come to birth, and which maybe may not be known. So this guy in the vignette, he is a symbol for her. We don't know what she will grow into. And until she grows into it, he is a symbol. He is not a representative of something that she has known about herself and repressed or forgotten. It's an image of something she will be moving into in the future and does not yet know. So where you can interpret a sign, you have to live with a symbol. Who is this person in me? What does this image represent? What is the anima or anima asking of me? And live with that question until you answer it into the future. Again, a big difference in the way we interpret in our work. I haven't said anything new. I've just given you some vocabulary. Okay? So we had shadow, animus. Next thing we get is the persona. Persona is easy. Persona is simply your mask. Yeah?
So in regard to the one of the dreams of the southern attraction for it, that so in the session, you would ask what would be the characteristic of the person.
So then you would say that's just a preliminary kind of account of what the traction was? Is that what you mean? That you don't really know totally what that symbol is?
You begin to describe it, and then you have to live with that until you understand what specific change it's asking for in your life and what specific new enterprise or task or accomplishment it's aiming at.
But the initial discussion is preliminary.
Is to try to conceptualize. Yeah. First you try to conceptualize. Generally the best you can do is ask a question and then live with that question, which is a symbol, until it becomes clear. Well, I guess for me it's a feeling. I just have the feeling, keep hands off this. Don't try to explain it. It just feels richer. But in a way, that's kind of partly the job of somebody in my shoes to feel that difference for people. I know some of you have heard this story, so bear with me, but I think it might help clarify for those who haven't. The story of the man with the child porn addiction. I was talking to a guy once who was addicted to child porn. And now, there's a million things you could interpret that to be, that, oh, it's some unfulfilled thing from the past. And I'm sure you could find somebody who would have argued that case. Something in me said, don't. Thank God he was not harming children. I would have had to blow the whistle. But I felt it was a symbol. That it was not to be understood as something unknown in the past causing this, but as a talent that he had that had not come to fruition, living in a reduced state. So I said to him, you know, if you're going to look at child porn, enjoy it. Well, that freaked him out right there because he was a preacher. And he did, and I let it drop because he was. There were plenty of other things to talk about. After about 6 months, I said to him, sometime when you are looking at your magazines, don't. And just sit in that anxiety and see if you can feel what else you'd like to be doing. Okay. A couple of months went by, and he came back and he said, I've got the answer. I want to play with toy soldiers. I said, well, build yourself a sandbox and start buying toy soldiers. Well, he not only built himself a sandbox, he built himself a sandbox, a kiln, and he began making toy soldiers, tin soldiers. And studying over a period of about a year, first he just played with them. Then he started studying battles and enacting the battles. So I didn't say anything to let that go. And one day I said, why do you think this is so fascinating? Okay, I'll think about that, he said. So another couple of months went by. He came back and he said, I know why I'm so fascinated with this. Because I'm fascinated by history. So he had access to local libraries in the small town where he was a preacher and started reading up on the history of the area. Then he realized that he had access to many little old ladies' attics where there were wonderful pictures of the founding of Indiana. So he went around to all their attics and collected hundreds of pictures of the founding of the state. And he put together a large exhibit of the founding of Indiana, took it to a museum, got state funding, took the exhibit around the state, and his perversion was gone. Now, I presented that to a psychoanalytic society here, and they said, you see, you didn't deal with this issue because studies show that perverts have unexpressed hostility. And that's why he was playing with toy soldiers. See, that's the causal understanding. I said, There isn't something wrong with this guy. There was something right that never developed. And because it didn't develop, it showed up in this low form. And by not interpreting it and letting it move into the future, treating it as a symbol, it reached its final state, which was a new relationship to the community on the basis of his historical interest. That's treating it as a symbol. Now, how did I know? Grace of God, I guess. I just felt, don't interpret this. That stupid-ass Freudian would have killed that guy. Because it wasn't repressed hostility. It was unlived creativity. And that's the difference between a sign and a symbol. Yeah?
And I'm guessing that you had a pretty good sense of him that this was something that he was not going to, he wasn't, as he began to enjoy it, he wasn't going to move to a different realm.
He was a moral individual with holes of pathology. That's a very good point. You could not do this with somebody. You see, he had done his shadow work. You cannot do that with somebody for whom morality is a problem. But he was basically a moral guy. He commuted. He's not from around here. He's from another part of Indiana. He commuted in with his family, and you know, they could use my bathroom. And he had three kids. He was a good dad, loving husband, three beautiful kids. But he had this weird thing, and that's a very important consideration, right? But it just, to me, I'm trying to make it practical for you. These aren't just little phrases Jung thought up with. It really has to do with how you approach people's suffering. And it was so, in a way, great for me to hear that Freudian criticize me, because he was coming at it from the reductive point of view, just what Jung spent his life trying to provide an alternative to. See, that those soldiers for him, for that Freudian, was a veiled expression of hostility. It was a sign. And I'm saying, no, it's a symbol. Moving him toward the future, not an expression of an unknown past, but an expression of an unknown future. And this is the consideration that enters into the work with the anima and animus and the spirit. And the forward movement of the psyche. Maybe that helps a little bit. But that's an anime issue, you see. He was fascinated by sex. Okay? Persona, very easy. The mask.
Is there just one? I mean, for a person?
Yes, unless you're nuts. Most of us, I would say, basically have one. And usually the problem is we think we are our persona. We think we are the way we are seen. And I guess they're going to do it at IRT this next year, Death of a Salesman. Willie Loman says, in America, a man can, I forget his exact words, a man can end up with diamonds just on the basis of being liked. That's persona identification. Doesn't matter who he is, it's how he appears. And there's nothing wrong with having a persona, you just need to know the difference between the way you appear and who you are. The way you are seen and what you are inside. And generally we mistake that by being tied to the way we appear. And here's a dream.
Do you actually need one?
Yes. Yes.
Without one.
Is also, yeah, there are two dangers. Identifying with it, and really in my generation, the children of the 60s, having none. Just saying whatever you feel. The persona is a compromise with the society, which is necessary to function with other human beings.
And didn't you say that it was the kind of mediator?
Where the anima and animus is a mediator between you and the inner world, persona mediates you to the outer world. And you say, but now why is this a piece of the unconscious? Because it can be compulsive. It can be compulsive. You can't control it. That's what he means by it being part of the unconscious. That's not very hard, I don't think. That's pretty easy. I just brought along one dream of a guy who was overcoming persona identification. Number 7 there, Johnny Carson is leaving the show. I'm a comedian. He has helped me in my career. I hug him and thank him. He hugs back. I let go. and he looks older as he leaves to his retirement. See, he's retiring his Johnny Carson persona, which got him pretty far, but it was at a cost, because there's no room for your real feelings.
When you're seeing someone, you have a pretty clear idea, you know, what their
I think, you know, part of what we do is, in each case, is try to understand from the point of view of the dreams what the issue is. And it comes clear over time, and it may change. The next part's hard. Are you ready for more hard stuff? We'll try and get through the next through 8 and 9, and then we'll take a break. Yeah.
How would it appear in dreams when a person has issues with the type of things people?
You know, public figures with a great appeal and great attention to clothing, exterior, cars. I think I better do this because we have some more hard stuff after the break. So I'll tire you off now and tire you off after the break as well. I want to talk to you a little bit about how Jung came across the unconscious. And for that, while a Jung psychiatrist at the clinic, Jung came up with a list of 100 words. Where that came from is a whole other story. But he would read first his psychiatric patients, and then he did this with normal subjects and people in his practice, a list of 100 words. And I'll show you a list of them in a second. But that's, I forget what they are. See, I didn't mean whatever. And he would say, I want you to tell me the first word that occurs to you. Green house. Chimney, fireplace. And he would time it. And normally it would take 1 to 2 seconds for people to give a response. Some words would take 5 or 10 seconds. And they would be accompanied, let's see, I'm going to make sure I'm doing this right. They would be accompanied by sweating, embarrassment. I was telling somebody at lunch, we do this as a training, part of our training, both give it and receive it. After 100 words, you're wet. It hits all your spots. So Jung would time these words, and he would notice that they would be going along, let's say, here's a word, here's a word, here's a word, here's a word. This is time. It would be 1 second, 2 seconds, something like that. And then, bam, maybe 10 seconds. And the next one, it wouldn't automatically come down like that. There would be a period of time before it came back to normal. So, third word might be triggered, the fourth word, the fifth word, maybe took 2 or 3 words before you calm down. And maybe another 10 words, and bam, something would be triggered. And no, the next wouldn't be immediate. It would take some time. See if I get this list up. I got the list of them up here.
Is the same list all the time?
Well, you generally just do it once. But yes, the same list.
For every patient?
For every patient. Same list. Here it is. In English. Head, green, water, thing. And this is an example of one Jung gave. So you time the responses. And then where there is a delayed response, you ask the individual, what does that word mean to you? And pretty soon, sad stories start coming up. And he realized that these words touched on something in the personality which disturbed the normal process of association. That's how he came across the unconscious.
something in us gets activated with which interferes with our normal mental process. And when investigating the commentary to these words, he would hear about some past traumatic experience. You can see how he and Freud had a lot to talk about. Yeah. Unconscious?
Understood. Yeah, I'm sorry. Unconscious.
Just here. It had existed as a concept in Romanticism, but this is the first time it was he and Freud were the first ones to empirically investigate it. Now, Freud, remember, at the same time, was seeing behind people's dreams traumatic experiences. And Jung is seeing behind the words that it touches on traumatic experiences. And he could see how that experience, whatever is touched, it hangs around for a while. And so another system gets going, which has to quiet down before the associations can come back to normal. That's the unconscious. So he and Freud dialogued over this. But pretty soon Jung was unhappy with his formulation, because all this does, the only conclusion he reached at this point, was that these sore spots show up the existence of the unconscious as a disturbing influence caused by traumatic events in the past. But what really interested him was not so much how that experience was caused in the past, but how was it that this unconscious then symbolized itself in dream images. So what dream images are, they're pictures of all these spots. But he stayed with that pretty much through his time with Freud, looking at the unconscious in it as a interrupter, slowly getting interested less in how the thing was formed and shifting his interest to how do these sore spots get symbolized in dream images. No. Freud was happy leaving it as the result of traumatic experiences split off a part of the personality, which existed as a separate system symbolized in dreams. But Jung just took that insight and went into it a little more closely, asking, how is it that the symbolization process works in the first place? He accepts the beginning, but he takes it on a step further. Well, the argument develops when he began to realize that these images in dreams are not merely the result of a past experience, but show up a little different. You may have, say, been traumatized by a parent, you may dream of the parent, but that parent shows up in your dream different than that parent really is. How is that possible? Well, here begins Jung's creative work. The reason that is possible is because there's something in us shaping that image into the form that it takes. That the form of images is a mixture of two strands, experience and something in us that changes the experience in the very formation of the image. So the image is perceived through our perceptual system, which adds as much to the image as does the experience which caused it. That something is the archetype. An archetype, his first understanding of archetype, is as a perceptual filter that shapes the images we have in our dreams, so that what we have in our dreams is not merely, as he thought here, a result of past bad experience.
Can you explain this? I'm confused.
So if you are dreaming about something traumatic that happened, don't dream exactly. It's not like a movie in your mind. You shape it in a different way.
Right.
And the shaping is because of?
Because of your perceptual categories.
And that's an archetype?
That's an archetype. Now, this is going to evolve. I'm just going step by step. And you can say trauma, but it doesn't have to be trauma. It can be any past experience. Now, remember, I'm showing you how his ideas develop. Any past experience that has somehow become problematic for you, turned into a system apart from your consciousness because of its incompatibility, and exists in you as a feature of your unconscious, which shows up not merely on the basis of what caused it, but by virtue of the way you've perceived it. And the way you have perceived it says as much about the way it is shaped as what comes in. So all he's done is gone from experience to image. So that image is shaped by both experience and archetype. But he made a third step when he began to realize what we've talked about in terms of the anima and animus. These images often know as much about your future life as anything else. So this image-shaping factor takes on more importance for Jung than the cause which gave rise to this personality fragment that he started with. So he's giving more weight to the archetype informing your dream images than he is to the experience that caused them. Am I losing you? Yes. Take the guy's toy soldiers. That was not just a picture of his aggression. It was a picture of something in him that knew where his life was going. Because we've seen how those stages evolved. Does that make sense? So these images are not just something that we understand on the basis of causality, but as something that possess a knowledge apart from what caused them. That is what Jung means by archetype. That factor that shapes them to know where we're going. So you see, he's moving from causality to purpose.
But these archetypes are formed in us?
They are structural predispositions for perception, which at the same time possess a foreknowledge of where our life is going.
We are coming with
them? We are born with
them. So we don't acquire.
We do not acquire these. This is the collective unconscious. Yes?
In the treatment of a patient, would Jung discern between treatments had to do with shadow area and anima animus?
Yes.
Because it seems, in the way that you were talking about the patient that you treated, whose fantasies of child pornography were a problem for him, you asked him if he already had, you found that he determined he already had his shadow.
Right.
For you, that was an essential step in being able to determine that, okay, this was something where you could talk about things in terms of him. And would Jung agree with you in that same way? And recognizing that it's important to do the chat work.
Yeah, definitely.
Sort of jump ahead to,
Yeah.
Oh, life can be so great, and we're
going to
talk about these
options. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go back to the toy soldiers. See, the early understanding of them would be that they are a picture of his problem with aggression.
They were a, that image was caused by his problem with aggression and is a picture of his aggression that he is not dealing with. But what we've seen is those soldiers were much more than that. They were a step in getting him to his history interest. And Jung just observed that the inadequacy of looking at a dream image as something that is a portrait of something that happened versus a dream image as something that actually has a knowledge in and of itself that's going somewhere. And he just gave that a word, and that is the archetype. The archetype is what shapes dream images to be something beyond pure experience. So the archetype is the image-shaping factor which affects the state of your dream images and are is what endows them with their knowledge of the future.
Would the
toy soldiers have been an archetype? Sure. An archetype shaped their presence. See, the guy may have had an issue with aggression. I wouldn't deny that. But the role of that soldier in his dream wasn't just a replay of his aggression problem. It was a knowledge of where he was going. And Jung just said, how can that be? How can the psyche have images in it which look caused, but when you look at them carefully, there's a whole lot more there than cause. There's a knowledge of where he was going. It's like that soldier in him knew where he was going and came up as a holding pattern for a future accomplishment. And Jung is just simply trying to create a vocabulary to express how that is, and that vocabulary word is archetype, and archetype means that there's something in us that is creative, shaping our images. And that has as much to do with the shape of our images as does any past cause. So that there is something in us shaping these images. Is that okay? Yeah. He doesn't discuss where they come from. No. What did he think personally? I don't know. Maybe he did. He doesn't address it publicly. See, he tries to stay in the framework of empiricism and just notice how the previous understanding of what goes on in dreams needs to be expanded.
If you just skip the time and space continuum, though, then there's no past or future.
Well, that's where I'm going, but I want to make sure you don't vomit here, because I know this is all new stuff, and I don't want to give you too much. I just wanted to see if you followed me that far. You're really happy with that? You will sound off if you're not happy, please.
Is the archetype part of your individual unconscious, or is it a part of the collective unconscious?
Collective unconscious. See, in other words, what Jung is doing is saying we're made up of more than instincts. There is some other factor in us. He just gives it a word. It could have been blah, 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 blah. To show that if we look at causality as our framework, that does not do justice to dream images that seem to point intelligently to the future. And he just creates a word, archetype, to explain what that, if you care, force is that's shaping the material in you for another purpose. So that this is behind the images in your dreams. Now, her point, which I'll just allude to and then we'll take a break. If you think about synchronicity, where dream images occur in the outer world, this is getting off Jung 101, but Jung was forced to realize, where's the archetype? It's not merely something psychological. It must also exist in the world. Otherwise, how could events in the world act intelligently? How did those bear claw buttons appear in front of my client just the day or so after she dreamt them. It seems as if, and we always have to say as if, there is an intelligence in material processes, so that material processes themselves act meaningfully, just like a dream image. And therefore, his first understanding of the archetype as a psychological phenomenon is wrong. And this is what he worked on at the end of his life, what we will be working on in the last one of these things. This is one of his last works. He became very, and this is what I was talking about on week ago Thursday, he became very interested in his discussions with his physicist, who realized that the material world itself seems to, in the subatomic level, operate with chance events that are no longer caused, can no longer be understood causally. Like, for example, the decay rate of uranium. No atom decays at a particular rate, yet there's an average rate which is constant. There seems to be a built-in structure to matter as well. So these guys just got talking. This seems to blow all lids off the paradigm, that the part of us is existing in the material world. Otherwise, how could the material world operate symbolically? And the physicist realized, yes, there is a dimension. This is uncovering a whole new dimension of reality we don't understand. That's where they stopped. But at least they raised the question. And I wanted to walk you through his grasp of trauma, first delayed reaction time, trauma, image, but that's not all there is to it. The image is shaped by another factor. Once you realize the image is shaped by another factor and you see images in the outer world, you're forced to conclude there's this image shaping factor is in not only inside us but outside of us. They are just questions, but I wanted to give you a full range of the phenomenon. Let's take a break.